Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Friday in the Savage Nation. Play it a little bit longer. Go ahead. Let him call in. Go ahead.
Don't make me wait too long.
My dog is nervous because he thinks it should be Teddy, my love. Welcome to the Savage Nation. He started barking when he heard this song, but we can't rewrite history, can we? Unless, of course, we're liberals, which is something they do for a living, which is rewrite history. For example, Nancy Pelosi makes the greatest political mistake of her life on demanding an Armenia Holocaust resolution, which was supposed to be voted on yesterday. It is not even covered in the local San Francisco newspapers, telling us that she blundered. It has opened up another war, another front in the war in Iraq. They won't even cover it. We're living in the ex-Soviet Union in parts of America. Of course, without the slave labor camps. Last night, I stopped into a bar restaurant of an acquaintance of mine. I haven't been in there in a while. He's an Eastern European. And we were chatting. I had a quick beer, a lot of young people. And I said, what's going on? He said, what's going on? I said, would you see what the morons did in this city with their proclamation against me? He leaned over the table and he whispered, because he was from an ex-Soviet satellite. And he said, Michael, he said, every day in this city, I fear that we're becoming more like the country I left behind. I said, only the people from the ex-Soviet Union know how bad it's becoming under Mayor Tusum Newsom and the other liberals who are dragging us into a new Soviet-style government. The American people themselves are hoodwinked by their apparent obsession with sex and violence, entertainment, sex, violence, and pointy shoes. So there it is. I mean, we're moving closer and closer on a daily basis into this sort of former Soviet Union-style government control of everything. Here's Pelosi making the greatest political blunder of her career, and it's not even reported in Phil Bronstein's rag. Topic number two, illegal crime victims are going to be given visas. That's right, you heard me. If illegal aliens are the victims of a crime and they testify against the person who perpetrated it or at least talk about it, they're going to be given a visa on a road to a green card. Now, I ask you, what if they staged the crime with friends who then run back to Mexico? Did that enter the minds of those in the government who have come up with this plan? Of course not. These are the same people who cannot stop bombs from being smuggled on airplanes, TB from being brought over the border. Topic number three. There's a governor, a very, very nice man in Florida, Governor Charlie Crist, who put up a Jewish symbol on the doorway to his executive offices. It's called a mezuzah, and it contains the word of God inside of it. And he did so because he respects the Jewish people and the Jewish Bible. He is being attacked by a fallen Jew in the ACLU named Simon in Florida, who says that it's a separation, it should be a separation of church and state. Now, I don't think you understand what's going on in this country. There's a huge battle of Jew versus Jew in this country. It's a biblical battle. It's a repeat of biblical times where the whole Bible was written about Jews who had turned on God or wouldn't accept God. Today we have them in the ACLU and other liberal organizations. They are the apostates the Bible wrote about. So here, if you think that the Jews in the ACLU attack only Christians, you are mistaken. The Jews in the ACLU, let us say people Jewish by birth, specialize in attacking all religion, with one caveat, of course, Islam. It's the only religion they seem to have no problem with. Read that story and take a look at it and see what you think of it. On the left side of MichaelSavage.com, we have another story, and that is about this jerk, Ben Stein, who I've always seen through from day one. Ben Stein is the step and fetch it, again, of our time. He's always complaining and crying about his illnesses and his weakness and then crying over the Greatest Generation and his father-in-law. And he pretends to be a conservative because his father was an economist for President Nixon. Turns out that this phony creep never fooled me. Oh, he's been loved by the Bush bots. I think he's been to the White House several times because they love this House Jew, as some call him. But guess what this House Jew, Ben Stein, has done? The man you thought was a conservative is funding liberal Al Franken's Senate campaign. Ripley's, believe it or not, would have to run this story. Of course, that shouldn't stop the Bush bots from embracing him even further. There are many other stories. Tony Blair, remember him? The Alfred E. Newman of British politics, Want Me Worry, is now on the lecture circuit. He's in New York, and suddenly he discovered what we thought he had known years ago after 2001, 9-11 2001. We thought that we had some kind of a leader. Then, of course, we realized he was just blowing hot air. Well, guess what? He's just discovered that the way to make money on the lecture circuit is to state that Islamism is to today what fascism was to the 1930s, something that those of us who know what's going on in the world know is going on, but apparently he's found out it's the road to a vigorous lecture circuit life. Let us see here. School that banned Christmas holds Islamist concert. Good. Hillary raking in cash from poor Chinese immigrants, many of whom can't be found. Well, what's new about that? We then have two movies to avoid this weekend, a new feature on the Savage Nation, which we will try to do on a regular Friday basis. There are two new reviews out, two movies you shouldn't see, and I'll leave you to look at them, written by a fabulous film reviewer who I frankly had never read before, but he's just great. His name is Kyle Smith for the New York Post, and he wrote a review on a movie called Rendition. And he said, Rendition makes an effort to convince us that the war on Islamist fanatics is really an attack on the Reese Witherspoons of the world. Good luck selling that one, guys. He says, Spoon withers in lame drama. And you have to read it because it's very funny. The writing is very funny. They said every time they want you to know there's a villain, he said they go into a southern accent. And here's how he wrote it. He said, in other words, whenever there's a villain in there, he says, southern accents are lazy script shorthand for evil. Anytime someone who isn't on King of the Hill or Friday Night Lights says, okay for okay, and you know you've got your culprit. It's really good writing. Thank God somebody out there can still write for the New York Post. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, any topic is fair game. If any of these topics appeal to you, call me. It's open mic to Mike Friday. I can do rock and roll and just play music and spin records if you want. Or you can call me at that number. There are many other stories out there. There's the strange case of the $2 million donation for the attack on Rush Limbaugh by the U.S. Senate. I find it odd that the donations went from 40,000 to over a million overnight. And of course, we learned today that the whole thing was a hoax perpetrated by Rush Limbaugh and his wealthy friends. If you actually analyze the story, again, I know this is something you don't want to hear. You actually want to believe that somebody's going to pay $2 million for that letter. But if you actually look at who won the bidding and who bid $2.1 million for the Democrat letter bashing Limbaugh, you look at it very carefully, and it turns out to be a woman who's a very good woman who gives money to very good causes, and she probably would have given this money anyway to the organization that is going to get the money, which is a good organization. And he says, Betty has been a listener to my program since its inception, and we can't thank her enough for her support. So what did she lose? If she was going to give $2 million to this organization anyway, she may as well blow up the blowhard's balloon a little further. Anyway, look, I really don't care what side anyone's on. A fraud is a fraud is a fraud. A fake is a fake is a fake. And that's the name of the game. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Play anything, will you? Play some rock and roll for me. I don't want to talk right now. No, hold on. Let's stop. It's too slow. We got to go fast. If you got to go to At the Hop, play At the Hop. No, I don't like Kansas City. I don't like Kansas City. I don't like the lifting in it. Play At the Hop. Best one we got here on the whole. All right, stop the music. There's another story I have to point out to all of you birth control fanatics, you lesbian feminists from the Upper East Side of Manhattan. What you've fundamentally done is feminize the United States of America. At the same time, you put forth the notion of abortion for America. At the same time that you were doing this, the Chinese were aborting only girl babies, letting boy babies win. What do you think the long plan of the Chinese was for a surplus of boy babies in China? See if you could put two and two together and come up with four. Read the article, China's Surplus of Sons, a Geopolitical Time Bomb. Can you figure this one out, all of you psychos with big hats and small hearts on the Upper East Side of Manhattan? I'll be right back. Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation, still warming up here. Still warming up in the bullpen. Frankie Lyman. I'd rather listen to rock and roll than talk about George Bush and Nancy Pelosi and Iran. I'm so tired of listening to this crap. You haven't any idea. I say let's get it on already. All I hear every day is we're getting ready, they're getting ready, Israel's getting ready, they're getting ready, I'm getting ready, you're getting ready. Let's get it on already or stop it. Stop the garbage. Fire one off already. Just do a test round or somewhere outside of Tehran. See what happens. You know, go whoops. Fire one off already at those vermin. I'm sick of this. Every day the same thing. Iran this, Iran that. Well, then do something about it. What are you telling us about it if you're not going to do anything about it, is the way I feel. They're building. They're not building. They might be building. In a year, they're going to have it. They have it last year. They had it. They got it from Russia. Russia's their friend. Russia's not their friend. Russia's fooling us. Russia's fooling them. We're going to get hit. They're not going to get hit. They're going to wipe Israel out. They're not going to wipe Israel out. Israel can hit Syria. Don't worry. They can take care of them. Do something already. What is this charade going on? None of us believe a word that we're hearing. Not one word. Not one word coming out of the government media complex. Here you got a case of Nancy Pelosi. She opens up another front in the war in Iraq. She alienates a key ally, Turkey, and they won't even cover it in the newspapers. To show you the level of Izvestia or Pravda that we have in the newspapers today, how bad it really is that I, an unknown talk show host with over 350 stations and only 10 to 20 million listeners, only I have to talk about these things? Your major media talks about what, Britney Spears running over some jerk sneaker? Or another one puking on herself? It's unbelievable to me. What kind of newspaper business is this? So I don't know what you want to talk about, truthfully. It's open mic to mic. You think I want to talk about these things? I guess I have to. That's the job. All right. That's the job I got to talk about. I'm bored of it. I really am totally and absolutely tapped out on this garbage. And the reason is that it's all lies. It's all sure. It's all it's the shadows on the wall that was written about thousands of years ago by the ancient Greek philosopher, who some of you may know who I'm talking about. You're not seeing the actual act. You're seeing the shadow on the walls of the cave. You don't know what's really going on. It's all like a puppet show, but you're not even seeing the puppets. You're seeing their shadows on the wall, and you're thinking that's the actual puppet. That's what's really going on here. Okay, Charleston, Jeannie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead. Topic, please.
Yeah, Michael, I think you're wrong about Ann Coulter. You know, I'm a conservative woman, and I really enjoy listening to your show. But, you know, I think that you're doing to her exactly what you said those fascists in San Francisco did to you, you know, taking one.
Well, you see, I figured somebody of your low mentality would make a comparison like that, and I guess it's hard for you to reason. Maybe you're low on the fish oils or Lent hasn't come around yet. But there's no comparison between what happened to me and what happened to her. No comparison whatsoever.
she's really not anti-Semitic. I mean, if she...
Well, no, of course not. If only the Jews would stop being so stubborn and take the cross, why, then they'd be a complete person. They'd be just like you. They'd be perfect like you, Jeannie, right? Right now, the Jewish people are only four-fifths a genie, right? You're a five-fifths person. You're a full person because you're a Christian. And those honorary Jews are only four-fifths a person, according to you and her.
What she meant was completed, not perfected. And she explained...
Well, no, but you're perfect. Don't you want all the Jews to be perfect like you?
I don't know. I don't believe that, and I don't think she does either.
Well, that's what she said. Her hair extensions and all. Skanky body and all. She's perfect in her own mind.
Christianity completes the Jewish Messiah.
Well, there you go again. So you are espousing the very same vile anti-Semitism that went on for 1,000 years, only you are such a complete bigot you don't even realize it.
Wait, Judaism, because Jesus was the Messiah that was promised to the Jews.
Then you should forcibly convert all the Jews in Charleston. You have a mission on your hands. There are all those nasty four-fifths a person out there for you to work on. And then after you get through with the Jews, you can go around and get the Buddhists, the Hindus, and the Muslims and convert them, because they're probably two-fifths, three-fifths, and one-fifth as good as you.
Below your intelligence to, you know...
No, don't tell me what my intelligence should be. My intelligence is exactly what it is. It's filled with rage towards bigots like you.
Bigot.
Yes, you are a bigot. You're such a natural bigot, you don't even realize it. It's in your genes. In fact, the racists I've met in my life didn't even know they were racists. It was so inherent in their genetic code, they didn't even understand they were racists.
You're a bigot. Don't even understand that you're a bigot.
All right. Well, have a nice day. Go call up the KKK, WKKK, at broadcast in your neighborhood somewhere. 1-800-449-8255. There we go. All right. That's the most important topic on earth, is what the fetid skank said. Not Iran, not Iraq, not Turkey, but what the fetid skank said about the... See, people want to believe what the fetid skank said because it makes them perfect. And then they can feel the same way the good Germans did about the Jews, which is that the Jews were successful because they were only four-fifths of man and they could act like beasts.
Savage.
You don't remember me, but I remember you. 'Twas not so long ago you broke my heart in two.
It is the rock and roll Friday version of the Savage Nation. Dow down over 360 points. Ho hum. Ho hum. Ho hum. A little profit taking. They got the fools in all week long, and then of course the big boys came in and sold it off and drove the prices down. It's pretty typical. If you study the markets long enough, you see it's profit. It can't go up. Nothing can keep going up, so occasionally it goes down, you know. And that's that. That's the story. There's no news, really. There's no news yet. We're waiting for the big one. We're waiting for the big firecracker to go off somewhere, or the little dirty bomb firecracker. Then the world changes. Then the battle lines are drawn, and then all of a sudden the ACLU is no longer relevant. They may not even exist the next day, you know. I've just lost my call screen to top it all off, so give me line one, Houston, Texas. Go ahead, please.
Michael, my question is, why is it that American taxpayers always end up footing the bill for Israel's wars? Why is that?
I don't know. Ask your congressman. What are you asking me? I'm not a congressman.
Well, you know what the answer is? The answer is an organization called AIPAC, which is the American...
Oh, yeah, I've heard it before, right. I understand. It's those darn Jews again.
Things are between Jews and Zionists, okay? I'm not anti-Semitic.
Oh, I know. You're not anti-Semitic. You're anti-Zionist. I understand that. You're a good man. You're a good man. You're not one of those unwashed anti-Semites. You're an anti-Zionist. You love Jews. You just can't stand Zionists. Is that it? Well, let me ask you something. What do you think of the statement by Martin Luther King Jr. who said, make no mistake about it, anyone who says they're an anti-Zionist is an anti-Semite? What would you think about that?
What do you think about the statement by the ultra-Orthodox community in Brooklyn, New York, who's against the state of Israel? Go to Jews against
them. Hasidim are certifiable throwback insane people. They're insane. They're totally insane. Totally insane. So what would you like to see done, since you and I don't agree on this issue?
What I would like to see, you know, I'm of Italian extraction, and I'm not at all prejudiced. Many of my friends are Jews, okay? But I don't...
Really? When have you last had a Jew over for a sausage?
I,
I grew up in Queens, a sausage. When have you last had a Jew over for a sausage and pepper?
Not moved to Houston, but I grew up in Queens, Michael, not far from where you went to school, not far from Queens College. I grew up in Flushing.
All right, fine. I'm glad you're a nice Italian guy. Now what?
Pardons, okay? So.
Well, no, I know you're a good Italian, so I asked you, what would you like to see happen?
Yeah, my point, you know, I'm asking you a very sincere, honest question, okay? It seems.
What are you asking me for? I'm not the U.S. Senate. What do you want from me? Ask your senator.
Because you seem to keep defending Israel at all costs, no matter what.
Well, what would you rather? Would you rather I defend Iran? Is that something you'd like me to do? Or Syria? Which nation would you like me to defend? Egypt?
Israel can.
Syria? Well, which nation in the Middle East appeals to you?
My point is, this is a republic, not an empire. This is a constitutional republic. Okay? And nowhere in the Constitution does it say that we are obligated to get involved in any external entanglements. George Washington said, let's not get involved with external entanglements. Now, the reason
That's right. So you then disagree with George Bush's invasion of Iraq, I assume.
Absolutely. It's a total contractor-in-chief. His friends have made hundreds of billions of dollars. And you and I agree on that. I mean, one of the reasons
let's just test each other for a minute. So let's go back in time. The time is 1941. FDR got into foreign entanglements against Germany and Japan. Would you have said that he made a mistake in those wars as well?
We were directly attacked by the Japanese. That's a different issue. We were directly attacked. Saddam Hussein did not attack us, Michael.
I'm listening to you. I want to hear your point of view. So if it was up to you, what would you do if you had the czar-like powers?
Well, what's very interesting to me, and I appreciate you giving me a chance to speak, what's very interesting to me, okay, is the fact that they traced this to 19 young Saudis. None of them were Iraqi. They were all Saudis, weren't they? Weren't the supposed attackers on 9/11 Saudis? Okay.
But I'm asking you, can you just make your point? I'd appreciate it if you could just make your point. I think it would be better.
My point is that the Middle East is an inferno that will never resolve until God resolves it, okay? And for us to be sending all these troops over into a quagmire in Iraq is a meat grinder. I don't see Bush sending his twins over there. You know, I don't see Cheney who has five deferments.
Your sentiments are shared by tens of millions of Americans. In part, I share some of your sentiments, Tom. In part, I do. I'm not a big supporter of the Bush-bot machine. You know that. You've listened to the show long enough. And if you want to dig back far enough in the archives of the Savage Nation, you can hear me say that we should cut off almost all foreign aid, including foreign aid to Israel and Egypt. I have said that on this show. Have you heard me say it?
Yes and no, because the part that bothers me is when you talk about a guy like Joe Lieberman in glowing terms, Lieberman is banging the war drum now for an attack on Iran. Okay.
That's another story. Would you rather wait for Iran to get a nuclear weapon and attack us?
There is no substantial evidence that they. There is no substantial evidence at this point in time. Okay. There is
Now you and I totally disagree, because what would the substantial evidence be? A nuclear bomb somewhere in New York City, carried in on an Iranian freighter.
I know that Israel has the best intelligence.
Well, no. Let's forget Israel. You now changed it to something else, which is Iran. On the Iranian issue, we disagree totally. If I had authority to do so, I would launch an air war against Iran yesterday. I would take out every military installation they have. I'd cripple every boat they have. And I would use every deep bunker bomb that we have in our arsenal to furrow into the earth as deep as possible into every known possible site where they're building a nuclear weapon. You know, let me explain something to you. There was no credible evidence that Japan was trying to build an atomic bomb either during World War II. Are you aware of that? And yet, after World War II, it was found they were desperately trying to build an atomic bomb to drop on San Francisco or Los Angeles. There was no known or credible evidence that Germany was trying to build an atomic weapon when, in fact, they were trying to build an atomic weapon.
No, that's true. That's true. My point to you is if we weren't...
What I'm saying is Iran is definitely building an atomic weapon, only they're hiding it from the world. And I don't think we need to wait for an atomic explosion somewhere in the West before we take preemptive action. I don't think that you, as a guy who grew up in Queens, don't believe in preemptive action. Let's go back to Queens together. Did you grow up in a row house the way I did, a brick row house?
60th Avenue in Flushing, right across from Booth Memorial Hospital. Yeah.
All right, but was it sort of an attached brick house? I don't know. Was it that kind or an older house?
It was not attached. It was.
All right, let's say it was a working class neighborhood, and everyone knew everyone in that neighborhood, right?
Absolutely. It was.
Okay. Good. All right. Fine. So we understand the world from the same set of eyes, almost, you and I. Now, so everyone knows each other in the neighborhood, and you all look out for each other. And suddenly you see a car going up and down the street with foreigners in it, looking at your house. And this car keeps casing your house or your neighbor's house on a regular basis, on an irregular basis. And they're glowering at your mother or your father. Would you wait for them to rape your mother before you took action?
No, but if I was already bogged down in a first war, I wouldn't have any resources left to fight the second one. That, you know.
Well, but that's not the case. Our new commander, joint chiefs of staff, chief of the joint chiefs, Admiral Mullen, has just said that we have sufficient air power to take on Iran right now. I believe him. We're not using our air power in Iraq. We got nothing but airplanes with nothing to do. Our ships have nothing to do. The ships are circling around in the sea. They're doing nothing. We have F-18 air wings on those ships. I was on the Stennis a summer and a half ago. Those boys are anxious to go. Those planes are ready to go. They're trained to go. They could take this bum out in 24 to 48 hours. And then we wouldn't have to sit here worrying. And I got some. Another point, Tom, is that after that, all of the other tin pot dictators or oil spigot dictators would think twice before threatening America.
My question to you is, why did we end up... Okay, look, it's not so much specifically about Iran, per se, although you're making that the conversation. The conversation is more that the Arabs and the Jews are never going to get along, in my opinion, and Israel...
I agree with you. I've said the same thing in my own house. It's a biblical argument that will never be solved. It's gone on from the beginning of time. It's Cain and Abel, isn't it?
Isaac and Ishmael. It's Isaac and Ishmael, okay? It's the half-brothers, sons of Abraham, one with the maidservant and one with Sarah, and they're never going to get along, okay? And they're warring cousins. And my point is, I'm an American first. The thing I like about you, Michael, is you always say you're an American first. I just think that there are some American politicians who are Israelis first, and I don't like that, okay? I don't see the Italians having a lobby. You know, we don't, you know, that's what's bothering me about this. It's not-
well, I think you may be right, but I think there are more American politicians who are Saudis first than there are Americans who are Israelis first. And I think that the commander-in-chief is an American who's a Saudi firster.
Well, what's his name? What do they call that guy? Bandar Bush? Absolutely. He always goes up to Crawford, Texas. And I agree with so much of what you said. Otherwise, I wouldn't even listen to your show. My point is, I have a big fear. Here's the reason I'm calling. I have a big fear they're going to attack Iran within the next month. I really think they're going to hit it. Okay.
Well, when they do, I'll raise the American flag on my house and play a trumpet. And I'll sing Hallelujah on the radio show the very next day. Tom, I'm glad you could vent on the Savage Nation. I'm glad I provide a forum for people on the Savage Nation. And we don't have to agree on every point or on any point. The important thing is to have a forum, which is something that Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and the others want to turn off. They want this forum ended. Because the day this forum is ended, just think what they could do with earmarks. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Every night I hope and pray a dream lover will come my way. A girl to hold in my arms and know the magic of her charms. Cause I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream.
It is the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation. All right, turn it off already. I'm not in the mood for any of this today. I wish we could talk about something else. I'm bored of it all. I know you are, too. If I'm bored, you're bored. Or is it because you're bored, I'm bored? I mean, I could read the tea leaves. You don't survive in this business for as long as I have without feeling the national mood and sentiments. And I'm telling you that the people are turned off. The whole political structure is just in a world of its own. And there were many reasons for it, and there's no point in me insulting them. I do that on a regular basis. You know, I get insulted, they get insulted. What's the point? There's got to be something else we can do in talk radio till a dirty bomb goes off. I mean, isn't there something else us little people can talk about until a bomb? We wake up to a smoldering city, and the government agents running around in biohazard suits telling us to remain calm. and to get on our hands and knees and pray to Mecca to show that we're in solidarity with our Muslim brethren. And if we don't, we'll be arrested. But there must be something we can do until that day. I'm sure there is. Chicago, Illinois. Nate, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, I got to tell you, you know, I disagree with the fact that we need to go to Iran right now. I feel that, you know, we've really painted ourselves in a corner by going after Iraq. And to think that we can march into Iran right now, you know, on the world stage and think that, you know, Russia.
Well, first of all, nobody thinks we can march in. We don't have the troops to march in, but we have the planes to bomb in. We could hold a bomb in, sort of like a bee-in from the sky.
But here's the thing, you know.
I mean, Ahmadinejad has said on many occasions he wants to take out little Satan Israel and then big Satan America. Do we wait until he can do so?
Unfortunately, the answer is yes. We have to wait because of the crap we pulled in Iraq. We're stuck now.
What do you mean we have to wait? Why do we have to wait? That's like a rapist circling your block saying he's going to rape one of your children. What, do you wait for him to do it?
I wouldn't personally, but I'll tell you what, our country has.
Well, wait. But you see, don't you understand that you have to project the personal is political? The only way to make sense of a lot of things in this world is to put yourself in the position of the nation. Try to identify with the nation as an organic body. The problem is many of us don't have any sense of nationality or what a nation really is. Our nation, our nationhood is being threatened both from George Bush and the globalists and from the Islamists. And we, the people, have a right to defend ourselves and our nation through nationalism. And believe me, this message is not being lost on old boys in the CIA, old boys in the Defense Department, and people inside the FBI who know what's going on. They know exactly what's going on. Thanks for the call. But it's not my job to do this. Don't you understand that? Who am I? Nobody. I'm a guy not an undershirt. The summer's over. I'm a guy in a flannel shirt with a toy poodle. I'm a guy in a red flannel shirt with a toy poodle named Teddy. That's really who I am. I'm giving you one man's opinion. No matter how vociferously I give it to you, it's still only one man's opinion. That's all it really is. That's all talk radio comes down to be. Do you understand that? And one of the reasons that I'm in the doldrums right now is because I'm an idealist. And as an idealist, I really thought that I could make a difference. I was never taken in by George Bush. Going back to the year 2000, I was very tepid about him. I knew what he was. I had no idea he was this bad. And I had to choose him over Gore because Gore would have been worse. Same thing again, 2004. I knew Bush by 2004 what he was. I knew that the entire structure was crumbling. I knew that they were going globalist. I saw the whole picture. I saw they were no longer taking positions on family values. I saw what they were doing already. But Kerry was worse, so I had to choose Bush and I had to support him. But as an idealist, after 15 years of fighting in the psychic trenches of this country's political battles, I'm numb. I feel like I'm shell-shocked from it. What did we get? What did we get from George Bush after all these years? That's so much better than the Democrats. Oh, a little bit different. Not much. Not much different. What Bush gave us was the same thing they would have given us on a slightly slower track. They would have done it on a faster track. They would have skipped a few stations. That's about it. They would have given us this on the express train, you know. Now, as a result of George Bush's seven devastating years, the conservative movement is completely fractured. Family values have been destroyed. World unity is in disarray. The American people don't know which way they're turning. And we're all sitting here waiting for the arrival on the scene of the arch-Leninist Hillary Clinton, who already had power for 8 years. You know just what to expect from her. Only it's going to be much worse this time. If you liked Sandy Berger, a national security advisor, stealing documents out of the National Archives, he's a man who had to give up his law license for doing so, becoming again an advisor to Hillary Clinton. If you want to see the same panoply of perverts and criminals in the White House, well, you're going to get it. There's nothing I can do about it. Nothing whatsoever. Take a look at the 3Com deal. Many of you don't even know what it is because it's not being covered. Brian, you know what it's about. KNEW is the station. Brian, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, yet again, the general media is weeks behind you because I saw on a preview today that on CNN they finally think that the risks of this deal are worth covering. And yet the leprechaun has decided that Ellen DeGeneres' dog is a more important story. So You're right again.
What do you expect from the man who began at Entertainment Tonight? You know, you're expecting too much from him. He's doing the best he can, being who he is, and that's it. But he's not our problem. What I love today is the story came out that 3Com won't share sensitive technology with China's Huawei. Can you believe this? It's the same rubbish we heard about the Dubai ports deal, which is that although the Arabs are going to get control of our ports and run the security, the bad Arabs are not going to have any access to the security data on the computers. Only the good Arabs are going to have access to it. Do you believe it for a minute?
Well,
no, of course not. Of course not. Here's how I explain it to the average American, who, of course, understood it better than the Paulson would like him to believe we understand it. We hear that 3Com won't share sensitive technology with China's Huawei company, whatever it's called, Huawei. Pardon me for my mispronunciation. I haven't read my PC dictionary of the day, so I'll call it Huawei. Huawei is a Chinese company run by the Chinese military with a fake business front. 3Com is a highly developed technology company that builds, amongst other things, or creates among has created, amongst other things, technological firewalls for Defense Department computers. Now, as you well know, the Chinese military has tried to hack the Defense Department computers for a long time now, and possibly they've done so. So by buying 3Com Corporation, they will get access to the firewall itself and be able to penetrate our military computers, and thereby possibly rendering our aircraft carriers and other military hardware obsolete. In other words, they'll cripple it before it can be used. They can cripple communications between our ships and our airplanes. They're very smart, the Chinese. They figure we have such criminals running everything who are so greedy that they're going back to the adage of the Bolsheviks, which is that when the last capitalist is hung, we'll hang him with the rope that he made.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Eddie, this is for you. I'm playing this song for my dog.
Rock and roll on the flat top, catching now the dungaree doll. Headed for the gym to the soccer.
I turn it off. It's too hysterical for me. It's like uncooked hamburger. Welcome to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. Everything's too buttoned down. It's just too buttoned down. The whole nation is like buttoned. Nothing is spontaneous. Everything is a PR stunt. There's nothing that goes on that hasn't been planned and run through the hopper and thought about. Everything is controlled and contrived. And then the dunces come on the news and tell you what you just saw. They have a news conference. And then they have the morons, the empty skirts, come on and tell you what you actually just heard in case you should think for 1 second. The next thing they flash you some this and that. It's frightening. I feel like I'm living in a brainwashing studio. WOR, George, you're on the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Professor Savage.
Yes, sir.
Have something to tell you that I think might help you and anybody else that's listening. If you listen to Luciano Pavarotti, Nessa Dorme, We Will Win, especially toward the end, the way it's sung, and was a great loss to us, losing a great tenor, as you know, I think...
Well, sure, I devoted an entire show to him. I'm the only one in talk radio who even knew who he was.
Well,
the other people in talk radio never heard of him. So what's the point of your call?
Well, the point of my call is that if you just played the Nessa Dorme, it would make you feel better. It's an uplifting thing, the way he sings it. And it's,
All right. We'll look for it. We'll try to get it. Is there any other point to this call or not?
Well, just that I thought that it would help you just listening to him sing that. And it might
nothing will help me. Absolutely nothing will help me. When I get in these moods, nothing helps me. So thank you for trying. This is who I am. You have to live with it. You don't. You could go listen to sports if you want to. Golfing, I don't care. Go watch the Golf Channel or Home Repair. I like those home channels are funny. You know, this old house. They're ripping and pulling and putting the toilet where the kitchen was. And the closet was where the water closet. Then the guy slept under the floorboard. It's phenomenal what people do with their lives. I have no idea why they do it. And then they think their life's going to be different. You know, they think that if they put tile in, I'm becoming a nihilist again, I think. I'm going back to my nihilistic roots. If they put in a marble kitchen, their marriage is going to improve. Their child's going to be better looking. God. They're going to be loved by their church community. If only they put in tile and marble, everyone's going to love them. It's amazing what this country really is. It is it's a gigantic air-conditioned nightmare. The only people who could get me out of the mood I'm in lately are all dead. Henry Miller would have been able to get me out. I've gone into these. I've been here before. I used to read my way out of them. I'd read Henry Miller for sometimes days or weeks. And I'd come out of it. I'd see the whole, the colossal joke of it all. But Henry Miller's dead. Or I would have read when I was earlier On the Road by Jack Kerouac, which lit a fire under my behind and got me out of Queens and on the road. Or I would have read Hemingway before that, which got me out of Queens and got me to the Grand Bahama Islands to sell real estate. Or I would have watched Sky King before that as I was eating my chocolate pudding on Utopia Parkway and dreamed of a time in life when I could actually fly a plane like that and rescue people up in Alaska. I mean, there's nothing. Where's the inspiration in our society? It's so debased. Where do you turn for inspiration? Many of you turn to me. Well, right now you're looking in the wrong direction. I got nothing to give you. I got to tell you that right now. I'll admit it to you. I don't care. I don't care. When I have something to offer you in that way, some inspirational thought, I will give it to you. Right now I'm not in that mood. And for me to give you the false article, I can't do it to you. Why I'm here is a million different reasons. I had a tooth pulled the other day. It's probably the effect of the anesthetic getting injected in 18 little shots in the tooth over. This one is not going to hurt. The more shots than it. The shots hurt more than yanking the tooth out. So I said to the dentist, how did they do this hundreds of years ago without all these? He said, whiskey. I said, so what are you injecting me for? Why didn't you just tell me to bring Jim Beam? No, you can't do that anymore. But you know what it is? It's the mortality thing getting to me again, because in the circle, the small circle of people, well, I'm going to try and rephrase this. There were three or four deaths of men, either my age or a little younger, in the last year. And they weren't all relatives, but it starts to get to you, no matter how you look the other way. You know what I mean? Now a guy close to the family has a father a little bit older than me, and he was diagnosed with inoperable cancer. The guy had no symptoms at all. Went in for a heart scan and they found a little stomach cancer that spread to the lungs, to the liver, and he has weeks or months to live. That's no symptoms, mind you. Then my brother-in-law died a few months ago, a wonderful man who didn't deserve to suffer and die the way he did. The vermin of the earth should suffer and die. Did everything right in his life. Overcame obstacles. Church deacon, PhD, spoke Chinese, raised a wonderful family. Never took a nickel that wasn't. I mean, why him? It's these questions that start to get at you. And then you come in a way to the randomness of it all. And okay, I've lived with it before. It's not like the first time. I'm not a baby. I mean, I've faced these questions since I'm a child and we had the tragedy in my own home. So it's not like it's something new to me. But these are nothing compared to what the men went through in World War II. Nothing. If you look at the deprivations and privations that the average American boy went through in World War II, they dwarf any of our complaints, any of them whatsoever. Men who had to sleep in foxholes in 3 inches of icy water with no food and rotten clothing. You know, what was the heartbreak? What was the heartbreak for the average Italian boy who went over to fight at Anzio and the mother thought he was going to come home and he was writing letters? The next thing she knew, she got a Dear John letter from the military. Can you measure such heartbreak? Can you measure heartbreak when the boy had sent a letter before that that said, Nom dimenticare in Italian, you know, don't forget me? Or the mother had sent him one in Italian because she didn't speak English, and she thought her darling would come home, and she got all she got was a letter. They never even found his remains. So I understand the context of human, the dimensions of human pain and tragedy. I'm not overblowing having a tooth pulled or having some people die. That's not the point. There's another point. And I go in and out of these troughs. I have done it all of my life. And come on, Teddy, knock it off. I played a song for you already. My dog won't stop yipping. There's no one there, Teddy. Please, don't go for the bait. 1-800-449-8. I don't even know my phone number. on the show anymore. Do you have any music I might want to hear right now? No, I don't want to hear Pavarotti. It's like too menopausal right now to hear Pavarotti. You have to be in the mood for it. Tonight I'm probably going to have a good time because after the show, later tonight, the museums are open late in San Francisco on Friday night. And I'm going to go to one of the Friday night museums. I used to do that. I used to get inspiration out of the great paintings, European paintings. If I can only avoid making the wrong turn and walking into an AIDS ward, I'll get through the night. You know, every museum now has the obligatory tragedy of AIDS if you make the wrong turn. So between the Rembrandts and the Picassos and the Gauguins, if you make the wrong turn, suddenly you see a quilt that you never wanted to look at. I'm going to try to see if I can have a roadmap. Oh, the Schmattes. I got to avoid that one, the Nan Kemper exhibit, her shoes. Did I tell you about that exhibit? It's unbelievable. We have some really nice out-of-town museums in this city. I don't mean that in any derogatory manner. It's a small city. It's sort of like San Francisco is like a Cleveland with attitude. Which is, there's nothing wrong with Cleveland. I've lived in Pittsburgh. They have a wonderful museum in Pittsburgh. But San Francisco likes to pretend it's actually a big city when, of course, it isn't. Because if you grew up in New York, you know what a big city is. Or Tokyo or London or Rome or whatever, or Los Angeles even. San Francisco is a darling little small town that pretends to be something it isn't. And in that sense, it's rather charming. But her museums has some nice little small collections that they've collected over the years. They did the best they could, given that the money was always spent on such rubbish. But the fact of the matter is there are some nice collections, and you can go through them in about an hour, which is something to be said for that. You don't get exhausted like the Metropolitan Museum of Art schlepping up and down. I don't like going there anymore because they're the school children. I used to go there before it became like Disneyland. I used to like play hooky from a job in Manhattan and sneak into the Metropolitan Museum on a rainy Thursday when it was empty and you could hear your footsteps in the hallway. Then you could sit back and observe a painting. You can look at a statue. One of my favorite things there was an Islamic room, by the way, that had been transported from God knows someone's house in Syria, I think. I used to get such peace out of that little room. It was an interior room and you hear the fountain. Those days are gone. It's like trampling and cell phones and the smell of tuna fish, and everyone's consuming the museum. They have to consume it, not just, you can't just like go to a museum and look at the painting and get something out of it. You have to consume it. It's like they check it off. I saw something at a gas pump talking about fine art today. One thing has nothing to do with the other, but my mind jumped from the museum to the gas pump. I got to tell you the story. It was raining slightly here, which I love. So I'm filling the tank, minding my own business, and next to me there's a woman pulls in an older Jeep. And you know how pumps are laid out where if you pull into a bay, there's a forward pump and then a rear pump. So if no one's in the forward pump, generally you pull up to the forward pump. This woman didn't, big deal. It was raining, nobody was behind her. So she started filling from the pump behind it. She already had put the card in. She put the number in. She pressed it to the gear. And she had the pipe in the car. A woman pulls up behind her and starts honking her horn and says, hey, could you move your car forward so I can get into that spot? So she turns to her and she didn't get angry. She shrugged and said, excuse me, but I'm already pumping gas. The woman starts to honk the horn and getting mad at her. So I shook my head. I didn't know not to get between these two, but I did anyway. So I commiserated the woman who was already pumping gas and I'm saying, can you believe this? So she looks at me and she says, you know, I lived in San Francisco all my life. But I moved to Marin County a year ago, she said, for schools for my son. She said, I was told people in Marin are the rudest, most insane people. She said, but I actually didn't believe it. I said, well, if you think this is the worst thing that's ever going to happen to you in Marin from a me, woman. I said, you're mistaken. I said, this is a minor one. I said, that woman, you're lucky she didn't run you over. You're lucky she didn't crush you against your own bumper. I said, this is nothing. I said, well, what explains the rudeness of the people in Marin County, California? I said, drugs and Barbara Boxer. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me.
It is the Savage Nation. There are many political topics out there. Well, you know, a little bomb went off in Pakistan. Muslim killing Muslim. God only knows why. I guess they want to turn the world into a thousand year old hellhole. And she represents some kind of reformist tendency within the religion of peace. House sustains president's veto on child health. Ooh. We're not going to give health care to illegal aliens. Ooh. Of course, they can go into any hospital in the country and get health care. Bush's veto. Veto of a bill to provide health insurance for 10 million children. Get out the violin for the children. Boo-hoo. Of course, they don't talk about the Armenian misstep by Pelosi and Lantos. When doesn't Lantos retire and open up a deli already? He could open Katz's West in Palo Alto. He can get hair patches on his mitts, roll up his sleeves. Would you like mustard with the corned beef? He'd be better off doing that than making a blunder like this. What an emotional maniac this guy is. I despise people who use human tragedy for personal advancement, which is what Lantos has done all of his life. I don't want to hear about the Holocaust from him anymore in order to justify his stupidity. Sarah, KNEW, you're on the Savage Nation.
About the birth control for the middle schoolers? I believe that your view is wrong. I believe that it should be allowed. They should have the option to choose this preventative measure for themselves.
Well, it's interesting you should say my view is wrong because I've not discussed it. I guess you're confusing me with someone else.
Well, I'm just saying that these girls should be allowed the option.
Well, but the reason you call this show is you think that I'm a right-winger and you can provoke me into something. But actually, what's the topic? What, they're giving out pills to the 11-year-olds? What, in your... So would you have liked that when you were a kid because you were a slut? Is that what you're saying, Sarah?
Exactly what I'm saying. No.
All right, so you were a slut who needed birth control pills.
Excuse me?
I said you were a slut who needed birth control pills at 11. That doesn't mean everyone else is a slut.
Well, if you're going to take that stance, I believe that this should be allowed as a preventative measure because there are many issues facing these girls today that you
have. Well, why not just have them bred? Why not take them out since they're going to have sex? Why not go the next step and bring in studs to mate with them in the nurse's office? To make sure that they're mating properly. You've got to teach them proper techniques, Sarah. In addition to giving them birth control pills and condoms, you may as well bring in an expert. Bring in like a pimp from Ellis Street into the school, and he can show them how to do it the proper way. Wouldn't that go along with your thinking?
You'd probably like that. No.
Well, no, you're the one who's suggesting that you would like it. I said you are one of, what, 4 out of 1,000 sluts who wanted birth control pills in the 7th grade? But why wouldn't you have wanted a pimp from Ellis Street to come in and teach you the proper way to have sex? That's something the state ought to involve itself in, or run pornography. Why not run pornography in the 7th grade? That way the children can get the proper techniques down instead of messing around with mistakes and groping.
I think we need to protect them against the perverts. What if these girls get raped? What option do they have?
Duh. What is that? What does rape have to do with teaching 11-year-olds to have sex in order to justify the further meltdown of America's morality? What are you talking about? Your warped thinking is the same warped thinking that says since the junkie is using junk, give him a shooting gallery to shoot in. I'm sure you agree with that, right? Well, give them a nice, safe place to shoot drugs?
The children?
Would you rather that the junkie shoot drugs or not shoot drugs?
I'd rather that the junkie stay away from my daughter. And if he's going to rape my daughter, I want her to be on birth control.
No, but why? You probably think that it's a good idea to create shooting galleries for junkies, right? Because you're progressive.
Shooting galleries. Haven't heard that one.
Well, what do you mean? You don't read the local paper? That's all they're excited about. Is that the city's about to give shooting galleries for heroin addicts to get them off the street? So why not just give them the heroin and the needle as well? They give them the needles already, so The next thing is to give him the heroin.
Savage.
Hey, la di ding dong, a lang a lang a lang, boom ba lo, ba do ba do ba day.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above.
This is the jihadist song. Little did we know that it was the jihadist song.
Sweetheart, hello,
take somebody up in the heaven up above. Get it off. I'm not in the mood for any of this garbage. Here, piggy, piggy, billions in Fed trough. So Rangel's going to get $2 million in taxpayer funding for a library commemorating his 37 years in the House of Reps. Wow. Oh, this is the earmark list. La Raza is going to get $3.5 million to continue their hate, which in part advocates a takeover of parts of the United States. That's nice to see the taxpayer money is going to go for a brown supremacist group like La Raza. Woodstock Museum. Amazing. $1 million on a Woodstock Museum. Oh, that was shot down. $1 million for the Clinton School of Public Service in Little Rock. They mean public servicing in Little Rock. $200,000 for the Andre Agassi College Preparatory Academy in Las Vegas, whatever that is. $3.74 million of taxpayer money for research into the Formosan subterranean termite requested by Reps Rodney Alexander and Richard Baker of Louisiana, the Formosan subterranean termite. Did anyone tell these people that it's now called Taiwan, not Formosa? $750,000 for the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Presidential Library. 60 years later, he didn't have a library? When did that library thing start in? They all have a library. Requested by Clinton, Schumer, and Reed. Walter Clore Wine and Culinary Center, represented by Doc Hastings. $470,000 to study the Asian longhorn beetle, requested by Senator Dick Turbin Durbin of Illinois. So nothing's changed, in other words. Nothing. Nothing has changed at all. War, no war. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is the money keeps flowing and we, the schmucks, keep paying it. Now it's 50% of our income next year. It'll be 70%. See, once Hillary raises taxes to where it's 70% overall for anyone making more than $100,000 a year, she'll get up and she'll jawbone us and say, I am so glad that our taxes are not as high as they were under Dwight D. Eisenhower in the 1950s. I am just so glad that we have a free market system where the people get to keep 30% of their money, unlike in France, which is socialist, where taxes are just so high. They got the speeches already made to go, you know. So we all know what's coming. And, of course, it was all the skids were greased by George Bush for Hillary Clinton. Make no mistake about it. He wants this to happen. You know. Houston, Texas. Daniel, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm afraid you sound more like an emotional liberal rather than a rational, intelligent person when you talk about religion. You often say not all societies are created equal, yet you want to claim that all religions are created equal. I don't think your problem so much with Anne, whatever her name is, but with the book of Isaiah 53.
I have no idea what you just said.
Well,
what's your main point? I think if you could boil it down to a succinct statement, you might have a chance of communicating what you mean.
Okay, you often say that not all societies are created equal.
Yes. Well, let's forget what I said. Let's hear what you are saying. What are you saying again? The Jews are four-fifths a Christian?
No, sir. Absolutely disagree with what she said. In fact, there never was an argument as to whether or not the Gentiles.
So what is it you're angry at me for? I don't understand the purpose of the call.
Well, what I think is that there is definitely one way to God, and that is laid out.
But that's your way. It doesn't mean it's for everyone else on the planet. What do you want, everyone else to follow your way?
Well, what you are.
Isn't it enough that you have found Jesus? Must you now make everyone else follow Jesus?
Well, here's the thing. Isaiah 53.
No, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It's that kind of bigotry that causes wars. It's that kind of bigotry that the Islamists are trying to impose upon us, telling us that only their way is the proper way. Only Allah is God. Don't you understand that?
Never force my religion upon someone. But if you want to claim Isaiah really.
Well, hold on. You're saying you don't want to force your religion on others. Well, that's nice to hear. So that separates you from the Islamists. I'm glad to hear that you're a modern Christian. That's nice.
How can you quote Isaiah
but not recognize Isaiah 53, regardless of whether or not it's Jesus or not. Let's write off.
You're dying to say Isaiah, so read Isaiah 53. Go ahead. It's free speech. Go ahead.
It's quite long, but it said...
Please, give us the short verse. Give me the punchline of Isaiah 53. We don't want to listen to the whole page.
Says he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all like sheep have gone astray. Each one of us has turned to his own ways.
All right, well, what is the point? I know Isaiah. What is your point, sir? I'm trying to be tolerant here. I don't get what you're saying.
The point is that Isaiah clearly says that there is but one way to the Father. One way. And not only that, but the Jewish people went to war after war to say there's only but one God. Wars were...
See, I don't believe in a one-way street to heaven. I don't believe there's a one-way sign to heaven. I think there are many ways to heaven. That's where you and I differ.
I think you're starting to sound like a liberal there because you're throwing...
Well, I don't care. You can call me a communist for all I care. It wouldn't affect me whatsoever. Doesn't matter what you call me because they're all inaccurate descriptions of who I am. You could call me anything you want. I've been called everything under the sun. But the fact of the matter is, this kind of monomaniacal view is what gets people killing each other, to say it's only my way. So you're going to now say that four-fifths of humanity, which is not Christian, are all on the wrong path and that you need to get them on the right path?
Okay. When you read the Old Testament...
No. I want you to answer my question. Of the 5 billion people on earth, approximately 1 billion some odd are Christian. God bless them all. But you're telling me that the other 4 billion are not going to heaven because they're not Christians?
I don't think that those who have never come to the gospel of Jesus Christ, I don't think they'll be held accountable for that.
What do you mean by held accountable? You mean all the other 4 billion are going to go to the other place, not to heaven?
Well, they're trusting in themselves. It boils down to the single fact that we are all evil. Every single one of us. We're never taught to be evil, right?
I don't believe I'm evil. Where'd you get the idea you're evil?
Well, it's the human nature. No one taught me how to lie. Nobody taught me how to
lie. I never did an evil thing in my life. I've made mistakes, but I'm not an evil man.
Well, I think that it comes down to...
See, your doctrine teaches you and brainwashes you that you're born evil. I don't believe that, and there are other people who don't believe that. They don't believe that they're born evil and need to be saved by anybody.
I don't know how you can logically read the Old Testament and walk away thinking, I'm a great person. In fact, it just plainly says...
Yeah, because I didn't live in those times. I didn't do those things that they were writing about. I didn't worship idols. I didn't walk around worshiping idols like Isaiah was writing about. He was mad at them because they weren't going to temple and throwing money at him. He belonged to the establishment rabbis who wanted every person to come into the temple and give him money. He was mad that they didn't want to go over there. So what, are you kidding me? I'm going out Friday night. I'm going to the disco. I want to have a good time. You go to the temple. Don't bother me with it. So he wrote the stuff that because you didn't go to the temple and give money to the rabbi, you're going to be cursed forever. There are many ways to look at the Old Testament. It depends upon the mood I'm in. Thanks for the call. I don't like people imposing their religion on me, and if I have to become comedic in the religious arena, I'll do so, and I will do so over and over again. I don't like anyone imposing their religion on me. It's what caused pogroms. It caused the Holocaust, and so if I'm going to hear the same garbage coming out of someone on the show, I have to take them on, even if she wears hair extensions and thinks that she's advanced and over. She triggered this. I knew that she would trigger all of the bigots in America into finally being able to say things against the Jews. That is the most insidious kind of anti-Semitism there is, which is the superior attitude that it's only my way. Everyone else is like not as good as me. Don't you understand how ugly that really is? Isn't it good enough that you have found your way to God? Isn't it good enough that you feel purified through your religion? Why must you impose it on others? Why do you think it's your obligation to go impose it on everybody else? And how does that make you different than the Islamists who want to impose not only their religion on everyone else, but their view of their religion on everyone else? It's not good enough, in other words, that the people in Pakistan are Muslim. No, they're not fanatic enough Muslims, so they have to bomb them and kill them to show them the right way. It's that same kind of religious fanaticism that has misled people in the past centuries. I thought we had evolved past it. But apparently, because somebody has a skanky body and exhibits herself on television, they think that if she snickers long enough that she's smart. You must be kidding me. She's a throwback to a primitive form of anti-Semitism. How many different ways do I have to tell you that? And please, if you're happy with your religion, God bless you. Stop trying to impose it on others. That's my advice to you, whatever that religion might be. See, America is a wonderful nation. You have a right to be religious or not religious. But you even have the right to try to sell it to others. For example, all these years that I've lived on this earth, I've had these people come around in bad suits on hot Saturdays with comic books. Now, I've been nice to them. I think that they really, they're troubled people. I mean, they come around in these hot suits with cop shoes on hot Julys telling me about the wonders of this comic book. And I tell them, thank you very much. I take the comic book and I save it for when I need a fire in the wintertime. They have a right to walk around with cop shoes and funny suits in July. They have a right to do that. But I also have the right to say no and to burn the comic book. Do you understand the wonder of America? And I love that in America. I think that's wonderful that they come around in those hot suits with cop shoes. John Bakersfield, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I completely disagree. I'm a strong Christian, but the caller that just called in, I'm a strong Christian too. And the last thing Christianity calls you to do is to force your religion on other people like Islam does.
That's what I'm trying to say to him. If you want to break down the war in Iraq, there's a million things we could say about it. But I would say one of the primary purposes of fighting and dying over there for the poor men who have to do so is for freedom. And one of the freedoms that we enjoy here is the freedom of religion and freedom to be non-religious, but certainly not to have religion forced upon us.
You read the difference between the Bible and the Quran is that when they talk about the Crusades and some of the atrocities that Christians have committed, the difference is when those Christians have committed atrocities, they were not following what the Bible told them to do. When Muslims commit atrocities, if you read the Quran, they are doing what the Quran tells them to do. That is the difference.
I agree with you. That's correct. The unreformed Muslim, as seen in the unidimensional original Quran, is what has caused this bomb attack in Pakistan, where, what would you say, 99.9% of the victims were Muslims, who were probably, some of them were not religious enough for these fanatics.
Exactly.
And by the way, if you actually analyze it, Islamism is not even about religion, it's about power. It is a political movement, not a religious movement, and it's about power-hungry throwbacks with dirty little beards who want to take over the oil-rich nations and to gain control of nuclear weapons, and they must be stopped at all costs. Thank you for your call to the Savage Nation. MichaelSavage.com has all the stories I didn't get to today for some reason, and if you want to talk about any of them, you can do that. But again, it's so dangerous to try to impose your religious views on others. And I said, you can express them. But God, do you have any idea how bigoted it is to tell people that their religion makes them an incomplete person, as Anne Skank did the other day? That Jews are four-fifths a Christian fundamentally? They're not completed? Haven't you any idea that this was used for 1,000 years as justification for pogroms and for killing Jews? Don't you understand that? I realize that many of you don't understand that, and that even shocks me more. All right, I'll take a break.
Why must I be a teenager in love? I cried a tear for nobody but you. I'll be a lonely one if you should say we're through. Well, if you want to.
This is the strangely popular Savage Nation. The strangely popular Savage Nation. Okay, it's enough with the moody host, Michael Savage. The moody host. Because humans are moody. Machines are not moody. Anyone who's cheerful every time you listen to him is a fraud. That's all. That's all I can tell you. This is an organic show, meaning you're going to get it whatever way it is. So I told you I'm trying to get out of this rut I'm in. So I'm deciding to go. I know it's a mistake. I can guarantee you this is a mistake. Friday nights at the DeYoung Museum. Here it is. I figured I'd go and look at European paintings tonight, some of the great masters. They do have a great collection. But I just went on their website. Here's what worries me. So tonight is October 19th, right? Listen to this. The De Young is open late every Friday through November 23rd with live music, all right, poetry, films, dance, tours, lectures, cocktails, sounds good, food, artist demonstrations, and enjoy a variety of musical performances, red light, ranging from punk, jazz, and opera to avant-garde hip-hop. That's it. I know, I guarantee you, I walk in there, they got a hip-hop music blaring through the museum, disgracing the art hanging on the walls. Demonstrations, artworks made from recycled clothing? What, it sounds like a homeless shelter. What? Artworks made from recycled clothing, student designers, and more? Who is running these museums these days? The museum, store, and cafe stay open these evenings. Admission includes access to all festivities. Oh, God. When I hear the word festivities, I reach for my, including live music. I have to go. I'm going to pray to God it's not hip-hop night. Maybe I'll get the luck of the draw. It'll be opera night. How could you go to a fine arts museum and listen to punk music or hip-hop? Why? They think that anyone who listens to hip-hop music is going to come to the museum? You must be joking. You want me to get into it? I did the data analysis by race of who supports museums and who goes to it. It's definitely not affirmative action land, I'll tell you that. No, but don't tell that to the race hustlers. I'll go. Or I could go to a bar I know that has polka music tonight and just swill beer and sweat my, you know, dance. I don't even know how to dance the polka. Polka's the poor man's waltz. Let's see, the sculpture of Louise Nevelson. It looks terrible. It's not sculpture. It's garbage. Just pieces of junk glued together. Oh, goodness, what are they doing? Even the museums have been destroyed fundamentally. You can't even go to a classical museum like this and not be brainwashed, no matter what you do. But you'll have to maybe there's a room that they have left for guys like me who like to look at traditional painting. There must be one room left where I could see someone who could actually paint or someone who can actually sculpt. I remember I was there like a month ago. There were actual sculptings that are real hard to do. Like one person out of a billion could do something like that, as opposed to this sculpture, which I would say 3.9 and a half billion could do out of 4 billion. And that excludes the infants. How hard is it to do this? You take glue and nails and you bang it together and you call that sculpture? That to have an exhibit on. Maybe I shouldn't go. Maybe I should just watch a movie on television. God, I'm trying my best to avoid the culture wars, but it's almost impossible. Let's see. So the stock market went down. You know, of all the arts, the one I despise the most is ballet. I cannot stand ballet. Maybe it's my peasant origins. I don't know. Or maybe it's that I don't like to look at people in tights. Something like that. I just can't stand ballet. If you look at the origins of ballet, which I've done, fundamentally what it was the king or the prince had the best-looking men and women come out naked in his time and dance for him. And then they gussied it up with tights and walking on their toes to make it look like it was art over the centuries. Well, fundamentally, he was picking his lovers for the night, is how it evolves. I know it's like, to me, it's debasing. I know it's hard to do. Okay, I understand dancing on your toes is not easy to do, and I don't mean to diminish it. But why do they still teach girls how to do ballet? I still don't understand it. Running around in tutus. They may as well just, well, I'll stop right there. Here's the New York Times, the arts section. I love this one. Weekend arts, fine arts and leisure, the New York Times. Sensualist with a cause in old Vienna. That has to be pornography. When you hear the word sensualist with a cause, right away, you know, they're pushing the homosexual agenda somewhere. Somewhere within it, there's got to be some form of deviant sexuality. Imogene Cunningham's banana leaves offered at Sotheby's. Now, why would anyone want to buy a photograph of banana leaves, even if it was done by Imogene Cunningham? I don't understand that. Why would you want a picture of a banana leaf? I guess for the same reason that somebody would want a letter written by Harry Reid condemning Rush Limbaugh. There's a collector for everything. Well, with God's will and your listenership, you'll be here for another big hour on the Savage Nation. And with God's will and your listenership, I'll be able to report to you on Monday my visit to the museum right here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Listening to the music of this era, I can remember a time when the sluts were in back alleys and not on TV spewing anti-Semitic bile. I can remember a time when corruption meant padding your expense account and not refusing to account for the sovereignty of your nation. I can remember a time when lesbians stayed in the East Village instead of participating in the Democratic presidential debates. Play it louder.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go. Step on my blue suede shoe. You can do anything off of my blue suede shoe.
WOR in New York, Vinny, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Topic is family, Michael.
Yes.
And family, I want to go back to the 50s. I'm 62 years old. I was the last of 16 kids. I'm blind.
Wait, wait. You come from a family of 16 children? My God.
I am the last of 16 children. I was born in 1945. I had, we lived in, Michael, in Glen Cove. It's on Long Island.
Oh, yes.
We lived in five rooms, Michael, not five-bedroom house, five-room house.
Yeah, now hold on. Did you say you're blind?
I was born with glaucoma, Michael, and then at the age of six, I lost my eyesight in both eyes.
Oh, my God. So how were you raised in this huge family in a small house? How were you treated?
I'm going to tell you right now. And this is an important story because I'm doing my whole life story. This is very important. And this is based on what I got from my mother, my father, in the 50s.
Right.
It was a tough family, tough Italian neighborhood called the Orchard. Tough, tough, tough. We grew up with a lot of abuse, a lot of dysfunction, this kind of thing. My father, 5'2", Michael, 115 pounds, kept the family together. He was a monster of a man.
Yeah, he ruled with an iron fist, and I guarantee he beat the kids up pretty good, too, when they stepped out of line.
He beat my ass good when I needed blind or no blind. And that's
what I was going to ask you. Even though you were blind, you didn't get special treatment.
No. No, my father knew the deal. The deal was I had to eventually learn what life was all about. And it wasn't about coddling the little blind kid.
You know, it's funny. I had the same lecture over and over again, the coddling. He used to hate if my mother would be soft, treat me like nice. He'd scream, "You're going to ruin the kid. Don't treat him like blah, blah, blah." I'm sure you heard the same thing.
Same thing. My mother, "Leave the baby. What are you doing?" "No, no, 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 no. I don't want to hear it." "No. He's got to learn." And, you know, so we used to sleep, Michael, 3 and 4 in the bed. We had rats in the walls scratching at our heads. I mean, this was poverty, beyond poverty. The early 50s. Okay, we had we didn't have a bathroom. We had a room with a toilet bowl and a stack of newspapers. I mean,
wait a minute. What do you mean no bathroom? Did you have like a toilet like in The Godfather with a pull chain on the top?
No, I don't.
Oh, you were you were advanced. You actually had a flush toilet that you didn't have to pull from the thing overhead where Sonny put the gun behind for him for Michael.
No, in a little. Yeah. Room.
All right, so let me ask you: how did you go forward in life if you were blind?
I'm going to tell you. This was tough. Now, I was lost. I had nothing to cling to. My mother, unfortunately, was an alcoholic, and I had to deal with this. She barely sent me to school. My father was the one to keep me straight. My father was the one to try to help me. My father, when he got to play bocce ball, took me with him. He knew I needed special attention. He worked on an estate. He would take little chicks home.
So he was a caretaker on an estate?
He would take little chicks home. He would take me to the estate. Let me touch the horses. Let me touch the chickens. He knew. This man knew what I needed.
Isn't that something? Wait, let's pause. This is very touching. So he didn't have to go to a PhD psychologist from New York State to tell him how to raise a blind child.
Yeah.
Somehow your father, who was not an educated man, knew that you needed to touch things because you couldn't see him. How'd he figure that out?
My father was born in Calabria, Italy, and he was in the fields at 5 years old working. And he came to America, married my mother. My mother was 12 when he married her.
Oh, my God. What a story. I don't want to... So the first child was at 13?
Yes.
Oh, my God. What a story.
And my father, in the middle of all this, Michael, and this is so important, man, when you listen to the garbage of the, you know, the political nonsense and this chick dropping dead, who cares? Are you kidding
me? I don't care. Well, and you want to... The son died this last summer, another drug overdose. Can you imagine one produced another?
Michael, I'm not going to say show business. I'm a musician, singer, professionally since 59, 60.
Wait a minute, I don't believe this. Wait a minute, despite the fact that you were blind, you're a professional musician?
I've traveled, I've gone to Europe many times. I've traveled all over this country.
Isn't that amazing? What do you sing, Vinny?
I'm a blues singer, Michael. I'm doing the Ray Charles tribute show.
There's so many elements here. Today, if God forbid you were born that way, the state already would send some expert moron from a university who would ruin your life, turn you into a cripple.
I want to say something to you, and I hate to interrupt, but this is so important.
No, we're having a conversation. You're not interrupting. I'm excited by the call.
My first opportunity to talk to my hero, you are the voice and the light in this darkness called life. I'm serious. You're honest. You're the truth.
You're making me almost cry. Don't do it because I had a blind brother. I don't even want to do it. I feel like I'm talking to the past. I can't do this. I'm almost going to get too emotional from this because I don't know you, Vinny, but I feel like I know you, Vinny.
Well, I know you because we grew up in the same way. It was the tough way. Now,
but you're a blind person, so you have a different set of senses than the average person. Not only can you not see me, but you can only hear my voice in the radio. So you've come to feel it. You know me, don't you?
You know what I hear from you, Mike? I hear truth, soul, heart, honesty.
You also hear a man screaming out in the wilderness to be saved from the monstrosity called government.
Listen, I listen to the rest of the idiots on radio. This is all show business. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. You are the only one.
But wait, let's go back to you. Forget me. I don't want to talk about me, Vinny. I want to know, and I never thought this call would come through, how did you go from being a blind kid in a dysfunctional large family like this without a dime turn into a musician? How did your father lead you from petting a horse while you're blind and touching a little chick, a chicklet, you know, a little baby bird, so that people don't think I'm making a joke here? How did you become a singer?
My father said to me, you need to make music a part of your life. You need to listen to music. He was a musician. He played guitar. He played harmonica. He would sing to me. He would sit me on his lap.
God.
You know, the old-fashioned lunch boxes with the handles?
He would
play drums. He would make that a drum and sing to me. And he said, you have to listen with your heart to music. You need music more than you need your eyesight.
How did your father, an uneducated man, know all this? How did he know that a blind child needed music? Who taught him this?
I thank him for that. He knew.
Yeah, he was a very special man, your father. Let's start with that. And Vinny, you know something? This is the part about the average man that always impresses me, is that you never know what the average man is capable of until he's pressed to perform in a certain way. Some people become monsters and others become so noble it's incomprehensible. You know what I'm saying, Vinny?
My father raised and supported all these kids. My father was dealing, unfortunately, with an alcoholic wife.
Yeah, but your father didn't run away and say, I can't handle it, did he? He didn't run off and leave the kids alone.
Are you kidding me? Let me tell you what my father used to do, Michael, and I remember this. The kids used to sit down to eat. He would not eat until everything was done and they were all finished. And whatever was left, then he would eat.
Oh, my God, what a man. How old was your father when he passed away?
96, Michael.
Oh, my God. So despite the deprivation, despite the hardship, despite the poverty, without any help from the government, the man lived a full life on top of it all?
He worked, Michael, until he was 93.
Whoa.
93, Michael, he was a bull. And then at 93, on the job, he had a stroke. And
He drank a little wine, I hope, at night?
Oh, he drank red wine, man, big time.
Yeah, but I know an Italian guy that was around the family in my father's store. He would drink about a gallon of homemade red wine every night. I'm talking a gallon. Would you believe it, Vinny? These guys really drank. They didn't sip wine. They drank wine.
He went to work with a big bottle of wine, red wine, that he made, of course, and cheese. Cheese and wine, that was his thing. Then he'd come home. After the kids ate, he would sit down, have more wine. Wine, red wine kept this man going. Michael, he used to do things like, you know, these little personal things that nobody else would probably relate to but me. There was a butcher shop right up the street, and in those days, we used to get snails, okay?
Yeah, like escargot, the French eat snails. I understand it.
Okay. They were 10 cents a pound. I loved it.
The only difference is in Hollywood, they get the snails in their bare feet.
You got it.
So you bought the snails, then what?
I love it. He'd buy the snails, put them in a pot, make the sauce, blah, 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 blah. Boom. Me and him in the front yard, and he'd lay them all out, and him and I used to eat. I mean, that was part of his...
So did he love you more than the other children because you were blind? Did he have inside he felt more for you?
Special feeling for me. But you know what he knew, Michael? Now that I'm a grown-up and I look back at this, he had this incredible wisdom and soul and heart to know that the other ones could take care of themselves. They could see they're all physically fine. This little boy needed some special attention. I needed some serious guidance. And my father gave me what took me through life. He gave me music. Let me just tell you, Michael, after he talked to me about music, I started to listen. I'm a drummer, singer, Michael.
Now, Vinny, tell me how you became a singer and a musician in your world. You didn't have anyone from the state education department teaching you. Did you go to a regular school?
I barely went to school for years. In my early young childhood, because my mother was drinking, and I would spend most of my time just sitting in the front yard of my, the front yard, just listening to the sounds of the neighborhood, until the school really cracked down on my mother and said, "You have to send him to school, or they're going to take him away from you."
Yes,
it wasn't easy. It was tough. I didn't know where.
But they didn't teach you to become a musician in school. Your father did.
No. So let me tell you what happened. My father talks to me, and he sings to me, and he says, "Music, feel it in your heart."
You know, Vinny, I got to tell you, although I lived in the Bronx as a little boy, across the street there was a farm. To this day, I can tell you, the first rose I ever saw was growing on a vine on the fence to that little farm, and we would climb the fence just to smell the roses, and I couldn't believe how delicate the petals felt to my hand. I had never seen anything as soft in my life. I'm sure you could relate to that.
I can totally relate to that. In my neighborhood, there was, remember pussy willows?
Yes, sir.
That, to touch a pussy willow was one of the most exciting feelings. They were so, it was like cotton. If you remember how pussy willow felt.
Vinny, you were born with glaucoma, which was very rare. And you say your condition was written about in several medical journals. You said you had recurring cataracts and endured 12 eye surgeries. My poor brother had cataract surgery till he died. He used to rip our guts out every time they tried it. But it says in 1956, he received one of the first corneal transplants on the East Coast. There were newspaper articles, television, even a marriage bill. But however, the operation was not successful. And so music saved you, in plain English. So, Vinny, what do you do now?
I was going in for this corneal transplant. I was 12 years old, and they operated. And 3 days later, the doctor comes down and examines my eye and looks with the little examining light. And it's the first light I saw in like 6 years, 5 years.
Well, let's toast your dad tonight in heaven. And Vinny will be friends again. The guys are going to keep your phone number and we'll speak again. I'll be right back. I'm running so late. It's a pleasure. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know, I realize the beauty of radio. Here's the beauty of radio. Here is why it's the entertainer's dream. This is the greatest medium for a great entertainer who is shy. Now, listen to what I just said to you. No one's ever said this in the history of entertainment, ever. This is brand new stuff. I've gone down into a whole new realm of reality here. I have an entertainer's personality. I have since I'm a child. I controlled it. I worked with it, highly educated, blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, I've always enjoyed entertaining people for many different reasons, and I won't go into it right now. However, live performances are extremely demanding. And you ask anyone who does them what it takes out of people. They come off drained, and it really wrecks them in some ways. Yeah, you get the energy of the crowd. But getting up in front of people is really amazing. So now, listen to where I'm going. Let's say the numbers say that I have 8 to 10 million listeners a week. It's probably closer to 20 million on and off. But let's take the actual numbers of 8 to 10 million. That means that any 15-minute spread, there's 800,000 people listening to the show somewhere on the 300 or so stations that this radio show, The Savage Nation, has heard. 800,000 or so people every 15 minutes come in and out of the tent, so to speak. Now, can you imagine getting up in front of an audience of 800,000 people and trying to perform as naturally as I do? It's impossible. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the beauty of electronic performance, whether it be, it has to be radio. Because television actually gives you that feeling of the millions, the tens of millions of people, which is why so many of them are so homogenized, pasteurized, sanitized, pressurized, etc. And it's why many of us don't listen to the news anymore, because we know they're doing it because they've been homogenized. Rather, they're doing a homogenized newscast that offends as few people as possible. Consequently, it's not worth listening to. Why listen to something that isn't truthful? Radio, on the other hand, is an intimate medium because the broadcaster, the performer in this case, is fundamentally in his own mind, in his own world, in his own room, in his own studio. So he doesn't even understand who he is reaching. He has no concept that he's talking to millions of people. He actually thinks he's talking to a couple of people, a small audience. Therefore, it's like an intimate performance inside a small nightclub. At its best, that's what radio ought to be. And that's what I do, is I project into a small audience in a small nightclub, which is why it seems so personal to you. Do you understand the difference between this show and some others? And I'm not knocking other shows directly, just indirectly.
Savage.
Yesterday, we spoke with Audrey Hudson of the Washington Times about the TB-ridden flyer who managed to cross our border 76 times, unstopped by Homeland Security. Well, today we spoke with Sarah Carter of the Washington Times for an update on this appalling situation, compromising our national security and exposing still unaddressed issues of how communication between the agencies, the bureaucracies, broke down.
Let me update you on what's happening now. At this point in time, Capitol Hill lawmakers are calling for an investigation. A lot of them are up in arms about this. This is obviously another breach, once again, in the security when it comes to transmission or movement of persons across the border, even by plane, with illnesses that are contagious. This happened with the Andrew speaker case, and obviously there were hearings in June regarding this, and I believe that they thought they had closed up these loopholes. This case obviously shows that that hasn't been done. And at this point in time, Senator Joe Lieberman, others such as Senator Susan Collins, and many more on both sides, Republican and Democrats, are looking into this issue and calling for an investigation.
Wow, that's something.
This is what I'm finding, Michael. I mean, one of the issues that's so important to look at here is that there is a breakdown in information sharing, a breakdown within the agencies, within the Department of Homeland Security, and it's evident by this. Let me begin by saying that, you know, this story is because people are brave enough to talk about it. If it wasn't for the sources that were willing to come forward with this information, we would have never known about it. From what I gather, they had hoped that all of this would be buried, that nobody would ever find out about this situation, and that they would just go on like normal. Well, this gentleman isn't the only person that this is, that that it, this has happened with. I mean, this is happening all the time, they're saying. So, I mean, this is a very serious issue, and according to a lot of people, it really calls for a congressional investigation. They need to really look at this and try to rectify how they can fix it before something really terrible happens.
This can't be happening.
It's not only the breakdown in the failures pre-9/11, but we're seeing the breakdown between countries, for example, Mexico to the United States and other nations who aren't sharing information, and we're not sharing information back, a breakdown within the DHS. Yes, this is a very serious issue, and that was brought up actually before the congressional committee. You know, there are a lot of issues at play here, you know, bioterrorism, information sharing, failure for agencies within the United States to share information with one another to prevent this type of incident from happening. And what's so tragic about this is that the people that really want to do their job, the men and women on the front lines who have given their life to protecting the borders or the airports or even the police, really feel that their government's failed them in this, and they feel that they can't do their job. So what happens? They turn to the public, and they leak information, and they get it out there so that the public knows what's happening, and so that people have an outcry. And I really think that this is where this story came about, just like many of the other stories, you know, we've done in the past, and I know other reporters have done. I mean, this is really this breakdown in information sharing, this breakdown in our own system really makes us susceptible to possible future attacks, sources say. So they really want to see something happen here.
What kind of government is this?
When you're looking at this issue, and this was something that came about as I spoke with doctors at Harvard and other folks, they say these World Health Organization guidelines are not adequate. They're based on 1990s studies that were insufficient, that dismissed a whole host of persons that tested positive for TB. Because, for example, let me give you an example. If you grew up overseas, and it didn't matter if you tested negative your whole life, if you were on a plane with somebody with TB, and then you tested positive after you got off, now this is what the doctors are saying happened in these case studies, they would dismiss you. Because you had grown up in a country that tuberculosis was more prevalent. And it didn't matter, you know, if you lived there years ago. They would just dismiss you, so you wouldn't have been included in this study. You know, doctors say it is absolutely possible for you to contract multidrug-resistant tuberculosis on a flight of less than 8 hours. But yet these World Health Organization guidelines don't require testing for passengers unless the flights are over 8 hours. So that means any flight within the United States, anybody who was with him in the U.S., seated next to him, wouldn't be tested, even though they found out that this person did have multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. And it's unfortunate, because a lot could be gained from testing people. The studies could be more, I guess, sufficient and more up-to-date, but they don't do it. Now, some folks I've spoken with, DHS officials, say, well, you know, that's because of the economic repercussions from this. There would be economic repercussions if they had to test all these flights, and if people really knew they could catch, you know, MDR tuberculosis even from a short flight, maybe the airlines would lose money. This is what people are talking about. And, I mean, the health and safety of the passengers should always come first, no matter what, and people should be warned, is what they're saying to me. So, I mean, this is certainly an issue that I believe will go before Congress and before the Senate, whether or not these guidelines need to be changed or whether or not they need more testing.
Unbelievable.
What I'm trying to figure out, you know, they had told me, and even as early as today, that they issued a Be on the Lookout alert on April 16th when they found out. Now, according to the sources that I've spoken with, no one at the border ever saw a Be on the Lookout alert until June 1st. Now, according to documents that we have obtained here at the paper, it seems to coincide with what the sources are saying. I mean, we have documents showing that on June 1st was the first time they sent emails out to the managers saying that this person had, MDR tuberculosis, and that there was a possibility that some of the inspectors at the border had been in close contact with him and could have been exposed to the virus, to the tuberculosis. So it actually took if you're going by what they're saying, if you're going by what the El Paso officials are saying right now to the media, they said that they issued an original alert on April 16th, but the man had an alias name. So if you take what they're saying, it would have been nearly 2 months before they issued any information to the TSA to put this person on the no-fly list. So 2 months, 2 months. But according to sources, nobody ever saw any alert on April 16th. They actually saw the alert on June 1st, which would mean they still took another week to issue any kind of warning to TSA. And they won't explain why. They won't explain it. No matter how many times I've asked the question over and over again, they still won't answer that question. Why did it take so long to notify TSA? It did take 2 months because they were notified on April 16th that somebody was entering and flying and moving back and forth across the borders with MDR tuberculosis. And then there wasn't an alert issued until Ebola until June 1st, and then the TSA was warned on June 7th. So this is a serious issue, another breakdown in communication, you might say, and another problem that I believe the 9/11 Commission saw prior to September 11th, the same types of breakdowns in communication.
What can the Savage Nation do about this?
Well, they need to contact their lawmakers. They need to let their lawmakers know that this is unacceptable, according to the sources. And a lot of people put their jobs, their careers on the line to ensure that this story would go out public. They're good people, and they really care about this country, and they've given their lives to it. And they're frustrated, and they feel like they can't do their job anymore, and they feel like they're being inhibited from doing their job. And this is really unfortunate. This is a really unfortunate state of affairs. And I believe that DHS, as well as, you know, congressional leaders and Senate leaders, need to listen to them, need to heed this warning before it's too late, they say. It's an open doorway. The border, our policies that haven't been fixed, this is an open doorway for what some sources are saying, another future attack. And if nothing's done, it's going to be on the heads of those that didn't listen, not on the people that spoke out. And that's what they're saying to me. And I truly believe that, you know, once Congress hears the story, once the Senate hears it, that they'll understand what's really going on down there and really listen to these folks, because they truly do care about what's happening to this country.
This is hard to believe that this is still going on. It can't be going on. But thanks for the update.
Oh, thanks, Michael. I'll talk to you again soon, I hope, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Savage.
Another topic about divorce I want to talk about, because an interesting fact came out. First of all, you hear when people get married, they say it's 50% chance it's going to end in divorce. It's not true. It's now 57% people stay together 57% of the time. So it's really 40% of divorces end in marriages end in divorce. That's number one. And that's new. That you got to understand is that you have that wrong. They're trying to destroy marriage. But there are certain factors, according to a study, that can raise the odds of the divorce to as high as 70% or lower the chance of divorce to nearly 20%. An average couple now has a 57% chance of seeing their 15th wedding anniversary. And if they make it that far, most will reach till death do us part. You can laugh at it if you want, but that's the way it is. So according to the study, what are the risk factors? Age. If they're just out of high school, that raises the odds of divorce. If they're older, if you're marrying over age 35, it also raises the chance of divorce, right? What else? Well, here's interesting. This is an interesting one. If the parents of these people had a divorce, the odds of them getting divorced go up. That's an interesting one. And I think that's a very important one, because the children somehow are related to it. And then money is an important one. Money helps an awful lot. If they're poor, the chances of divorce go very, very high, way up, obviously. But here's the funny part. Well-off couples divorce over personality conflicts, and very often they'll do it at the drop of a hat. Now, religion does matter to a certain extent. Catholics who practice Catholicism have the lowest rate of divorce of religious people in the Christian community. Protestants have the highest. Now, here's an interesting one that you never heard of, that I've known all along, because I'm very outspoken and loud. Before the parents divorced, did they yell at each other? Was the conflict between the parents loud and visible to the children? Or did the parents keep their conflict behind closed doors? Take a guess which kind of parents increase the likelihood that the child will get divorced. Of course, the sneaks. The children of the parents who keep their conflict hushed up behind closed doors are those children who divorce more frequently because they don't trust their relationships. While the children who heard it and the screaming and the yelling, and then it led to a divorce, at least they knew where they were at and they know what a relationship really is. And they have a lower rate of divorce, incidentally. I'm not surprised by that at all. But I thought I would share that with you on the Savage Nation because, I mean, divorce is, you know, everywhere, so you may as well talk about it. The world is so horrendous, you may as well stick to the things that are simple to talk about, like divorce. Harry, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Okay, Michael. Love listening to your show. I happen to disagree with most of what you say. Let me ask you a question, a hypothetical. Red China attacks our country and lands here and is fighting. Then do we as Americans become patriots or terrorists or insurgents? What are we if we're defending our country?
Well, you see, it's interesting to start thinking like that, but it shows how far you have gone as an American citizen that you can't even back your own country in a war. Of course, if they landed here, we would fight them and we would be patriots. But that is not ipso facto, therefore the Iraqis are patriots. That's number one. Because you are an American, Harry. You should be backing our troops and not asking yourself such a silly question. That would be like saying, when the Americans were bombing Germany in World War II to take out Hitler and the Nazis, weren't the SS officers patriots? Would you argue that, Harry?
Well, to a certain degree, yes and no. They were not patriots because that was a whole different scenario.
Wait. What do you mean? You're trying to argue that the Iraqi rebels are patriots because they're defending their homeland. So would you then argue that Hitler's soldiers, not the Wehrmacht who were enlisted, I am talking about the SS, the Death's Head Brigade, the Adolf Hitler Brigade. Wouldn't they be considered super patriots by your definition, Harry?
No, they were not patriots. I do not consider them super patriots.
Why not? Why wouldn't you? Then you're double talking me.
No, I'm trying to show you two.
How is it that you can say that Hitler's SS officers were not patriotic, but you can suddenly say that the Iraqi bums are patriots? Where's your thinking coming from?
I'm saying that the Iraqi people, the Sunnis and Shiites who are from Iraq, they are the people who are fighting for their country. I believe that there are terrorists.
Wait a minute. But by the same logic that you're using, if you want to call it internationalist logic, wouldn't then the SS officers also have been patriots?
No, I don't believe that. I think it's a total.
Well, wait, now hold it. Tell me why you don't believe that.
Okay, because the SS and the stormtroopers, that whole regime was literally out to take over the world. They were trying to occupy other countries. So therefore, since they were
wait, hold on a minute. But radical Islam wants to export Islam to the whole world. Ask the preacher in Fallujah in Najaf. That radical fat slob, he wants to see the whole world Islamicized. So by the same token, he wants to take over the world.
So Islam is our enemy. I agree with that. I'm saying, I don't disagree with everything you say, but I agree with that. I agree that Islam is our enemy. But the point...
Well, hold it. I don't say Islam is our enemy. I said radical Islam is our enemy. That's quite a different thing. So don't put words in my mouth. But Harry, if you're trying to take that internationalist look at the thing from the other guy's point of view approach, why then you could never fight in an American war? Because you'd say the other guy is just defending his homeland too. Harry, it would be like saying you're a fighter, you're a boxer. Let's say you're a middleweight and you're getting in the ring with the other guy and both of you pray to God to win. Would you then say, well, the other guy is just defending his honor, he wants to win too? Would you take his side or would you take your side?
Well, of course I'm going to always take my side. But
well, why don't you take the side of the U.S. Marines then instead of telling me that the other guys are patriots?
Take the side of our troops. I support our troops 1,000,000%. I'm totally...
Well, how could you support our troops 1,000,000% if you're arguing that the Iraqis who are killing them are just patriots defending their homeland?
I'm giving you a hypothetical. I'm not saying that all Iraqis are patriots. There are a lot of them that are not. But a great majority of them are, and they're just trying to defend their country.
Nonsense. The patriots want their country to be democratized, and they don't want women in burqas, and they don't want Islam forced down people's throats, and they don't want to burn Jews, and they don't want to kill Christians. Those are the real patriots. These are vermin. These are internationalist terrorists. They're vermin. That's why we're killing them.
Not the Iraqi people. I'm sorry, Michael. I respect...
I didn't say the Iraqi people. I said the Iraqi people want democracy or relative democracy. But the bums we're fighting in Fallujah and Najaf are not the Iraqi people. They are A, fanatics who want to export their religion and dominate the world, and B, they are surrounded by foreigners who aren't even Iraqis, Harry.
Those are the ones who are our major enemy. I agree with you there. I do.
Oh, so what are we arguing about?
We're arguing about that I think that we are categorizing and generalizing that a lot of these Iraqi citizens who are, and I really believe, I may be wrong, Michael, but I really believe that they are trying to defend their country from an occupying force. Yes, many of them want us there because without us there, it would be bloody civil.
Well, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. We liberated them from a monster, the Hitler or Stalin of their world, and now they're shooting us in the back. Let them go to hell. We liberated them. Now we expect something from them. With freedom comes responsibility. It's not a one-way ticket. Now they've got to perform for us. They've got to join the family of man. They can't go back to their psychotic ways.
Michael, like I said, I respectfully agree to disagree. I respect your opinion. I love your show. And you know what?
You know why, Harry? Because a good part of you actually agrees with me, even though you're probably a lifetime Democrat. I don't intend to change you. I'm not here to front for George Bush. But you got to understand what I'm saying, Harry. The majority of Iraqis want the radicals out of their country. They don't want to live in Afghanistan under the Taliban. They want the freedoms that we have here. And in order for them to enjoy it, they're going to have to play ball with us. They're going to have to do it our way. We're not going to have to do it their way.
I agree. But again, I just hate generalizing, saying that all the Iraqis are insurgents and that they're terrorists. They're not. They're really not.
But what we're saying the same thing. I just said most of them want these bums out of there. Most Iraqis do not want this fat cleric screaming holy war. Most Iraqis want the Pakistanis and the Iranians and the Saudi terrorists who have come in to help that Sadr out of there. So we're saying the same thing in different ways, Harry.
Well, okay, maybe we are. Maybe we're looking at it from two different points of view.
There it is. You see, that's the problem, is we're 3,000 miles away, Harry. If we were over a cup of coffee, we'd probably realize we agree more than we disagree.
Savage.